This is the Mindful Musical Life Podcast. I'm Kevin Miske. This week, my guest is Dr. Jesse Thelman. Jesse is the professor of horn and music history at the University of Tennessee Martin and earned her degrees at the Crane School of Music at SUNY Potsdam, The Ohio State University, and her doctorate at Indiana University's Jacobs School of Music. Jesse is a regular performer with professional orchestras around the country and has shared the stage with artists such as Jeff Nelson, Andre Watts, Leonard Slatkin, Michael Camillo, Sylvia McNair, Eric Rusk, and Byron Stripling. Jesse is also the co-founder of the Merari Brass Quintet, which maintains a busy performing and touring schedule presenting masterclasses and recitals in public schools, colleges, universities, and performance halls all over the United States. Jesse and I first met when she gave me a horn lesson shortly after completing her doctorate with Jeff Nelson at IU. She suggested I look into studying with him at some point, so I did. We recently reconnected, and I have been reminded how amazing she is. Jesse is a deeply genuine person who openly shares her experiences to help others in an honest and inspiring way. I know you are going to enjoy our first of many conversations on this podcast, so without further ado, here is Jesse Thelman. Why don't we start by just talking about kind of your experiences in the past with performing and preparing for performance in kind of the traditional hardcore drilling way, and I'll share a little bit too, but why don't we start somewhere around there?
All right, that sounds good. So basically, I think any audition that I can think of, besides, of course, the more recent ones, it was always like, especially like for college, even like grad school auditions, my first couple of professional auditions that I took, it was literally just mania. It was manic. It was as much as I could have the horn on my face. And the weird part is, like, now I feel like I can recognize it way better now, certainly, obviously, than in the moment, that there was so much stuff going on in my brain, it almost felt like nothing because it was, like, spinning so fast. Like, you couldn't grab any one thing to focus on. So, I mean, it's no wonder that so many of those things were so inconsistent.
Right.
Because it's just, like, whatever happens to be in that swirl at that moment that I can grab, you know, is the thing that I focus. So it was, like, it was very little – I don't like using this word, but I think it's kind of the best one – very little control over what I was thinking because there were so many things spinning. It was just, like, whatever happens to be the thing, the card that falls out, that's all I got. So it was really a weird experience to have so much going on, but it felt like nothing.
Right.
So it was almost like a punishment. It was really punitive when I practiced. It was just like, I'm so like just drilling, 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 drilling. And then when I missed it, it was like, how could you possibly miss that? You've literally played this 1,000 times. But because I have no recollection or no plan as far as like what I want to think, or couldn't slow down enough to actually pick the thoughts. Like, I mean, it makes sense now, but back then I was like, how could this possibly be happening? And that builds a lot of baggage. So then like every time you go in after that, you're just like, well, why would this work out this time? But then that was also the tricky thing because sometimes it did work out.
Right.
Sometimes I happened to fall on the right thing. So it was like, yes, oh my God, I did it. But when you look back on it, right, I could never say, like, this is what did it. Mm. Like, this was the thought. This was the thing. So I couldn't create any sort of consistency. I just constantly blamed myself for not practicing enough. That was always the go-to. And I think some of that stems from like, you know, crap that you're told by your early teachers and stuff, which was true probably in sixth grade. I probably wasn't practicing, you know, I'm in sixth grade. I wasn't practicing enough, but like, I think I had enough or being an empath. I think I feel things like really, really hard. And it's really hard if they're negative or positive, like super negative or super positive. It's really hard for me to let those things go. I hang on to them because either way I want to feel them because they feel so good or they felt so bad. It's like, I have to remember this so I don't do it again. So I think I carried a lot of that with me. So, I mean, it was literally the exact opposite of mindfulness. Like, everything was out of judgment. Everything was out of, like, you weren't good enough. Maybe if you practiced harder, you would have gotten that thing or that scholarship or that chair, or you would have won that audition. It's, like, amazing that I'm, like, a semi-normal person when I think about, like, how mean I was. Like, and I think I shared this story with you is, you know, when I first started studying with Jeff, one of the first things he had me do was just notice when I said bad things to myself. So that could be like an eye roll. It could be like a, you know, like that kind of thing. Or it could be apologizing to the person next to me for missing an entrance, whatever. Or it could literally just be like, you're an idiot. Like, how could you miss that inside right. my own brain? And I was like, this is such a dumb assignment. Like, I literally remember thinking that. And I was like, this is going to be super easy. And he was going away for a couple of days. So it was like the perfect time to do it. And so when I started the rehearsals the next day, which was, you know, I probably did 6-7 hours of playing that day between rehearsals and practicing. And I very quickly realized this was not an easy assignment. But I was able to notice when I was doing it. So like I just became aware that it was actually happening. And I got to the end of the day and I walked in the door and Greg was like, dude, are you okay? You don't look very good. And I was like, this is what just happened. And I kind of told him like what the assignment was and what happened. And I was like, in the course of that 6-7 hours, whatever it was, I said over 200 bad things to myself. Yeah. 200. And so you think about that over the course of a week, if I'm doing 6-7 playing hours a day, it's about like, what, 50 hours, 46, 50 hours?
Mm-hmm.
Time, like.
Yeah, it's amazing.
7 times 200 is 1,400 bad things about yourself. Imagine, right? If that, like, if you were talking to your student that way, would you ever talk to anybody like that? And you certainly wouldn't expect them to be successful. So, that was kind of a turning point for me, but it took me a really long time to like make all the connections and say, like, see how that manic practicing wasn't helpful, right? Or it was just like, it's really weird how you just keep doing things because they're the things you've been doing. And even when somebody's like, oh, try something different, it takes a second to connect the dots and be like, oh, like, why are you doing it that way, right? Especially in music, because it's like practice, 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 right? That's always been the thing that everybody talks about. And so you're like, but I'm practicing. Why am I not getting better? Why am I not winning auditions?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges for a lot of people too is that just getting started with this process, like you were saying, that first time that you started to keep track of the kinds of thoughts and reactions you were having to yourself, right? The kind of self-talk you were having is probably the hardest part. And then
totally.
So I'm wondering, you know, someone's listening and they're like, maybe they're studying with a really traditional teacher who's very like, you know, like just deal with the mistakes and like, that's not good enough. That's not good enough. You know, that kind of stuff. It's like, how do we kind of blend these ideas of, I still need to get better, but I can't just be negative to myself all the time.
Yeah. I think it's because performances, when you get to the level where you have the chops to do what you need to do technically, or enough of the chops, right, to be able to do what you need to do technically, that's half the job. It's only half of the job. So like if you're ignoring what your thought process is, I mean, consistency in playing comes from consistency in thought. So if you have zero idea what's going on in your brain or have not taken care of that thing, I mean, so yeah, you can address the mistakes. That's totally cool. But addressing the mistakes – there has to be thought behind that to say, okay, what is the error here? What's the solution? And now I need to make sure that I've picked the right thoughts for me to make the correction and make the correction consistently. And yeah, that does involve some practice, but so much more. I think when you get to a certain level of playing, like for example, when I started studying with Jeff, I won my first professional audition within 6 weeks. That wasn't because in 6 weeks, all of a sudden I became a good enough player to win an audition. It was because I wrapped my brain around some of the mental things that needed to happen. And those were things I just never, ever considered previous to that. But it's like now, and just you, like the conversations you and I have had, it's like, isn't it amazing to think like, even like what you were saying, you know, like over the course of a week, like thinking about some of the things that you and I have talked about that have brought up for each of us. And mm-hmm. just in the course of a week, you're like, this has literally changed how I sound as a player. And it yeah. wasn't because you were practicing more. And it kind of sounded like you were actually practicing horn on face less.
Yeah.
And more of the work came in the mental.
I would say I was doing less repetitions for sure. Like less like physical musical repetitions with a horn on my face, as you said, where it's more processing and thinking about what my intentions are and the way I want to feel and all that kind of stuff. So yeah. like when we like prepare in this kind of way, cause I've had exactly the same experiences, right? The constant kind of negative thoughts and you know, corrections and things where they're disguised in this goal of being a better musician and a better player, but really are internally destructive. Yeah. Like what does it feel like when, like for you, what does it feel like when you're performing or have performed in the past with that kind of preparation? Like,
yeah. Well, if I can like derail this for a quick second, sure. I'm just interested in, because you said, you know, you've had similar experiences. What was the manifestation of that approach for you? Like, what were the things you saw in your playing or approach?
I think the word manic was a really good descriptor for it, right? Because every minute that I was practicing, I felt like I couldn't get enough done, right? It was like, I have to do more repetitions and I have to do more of this. And like, oh, that one slur is still not great. So I got to practice that one slur 100 times and all that kind of stuff. And I could feel after I started trying to be more aware of my thoughts and my physical sensations and things while playing and practicing, I became aware that when I was practicing like that, my body would just get tighter and tighter and my mind would get more frantic and my breath would get more shallow. And all this stuff was happening that was constricting like my ability to play my instrument well. Right. Yeah. And it was once I realized that, then it was then trying to actually change it was a whole nother thing. Right. But it was just becoming aware of it the first time. But yeah, as a result in performance, let's say that there was like one measure that's really, really hard and something that I'm playing and like a big downward leap and then back up, something like that, where I'm like in the high range and I have to drop down real low. That was a spot for a long time for me that was rife for the possibility of tension and tightness and not getting those low notes to be the sound that I wanted. And I would rep that one measure over and over and over and over and over and over again. And then usually in performance, it wouldn't go very well, even though I had practiced it a million times.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't practicing with the kind of intention and the kind of like mental and physical backup that it needed, not just the notes, but yeah. like the whole process.
Yeah. Isn't it weird how we can convince ourselves that the physical is the thing? Like think about any other thing you do in your life. Is it literally just the act of physically doing it that makes it like... I would be like, no, like, why would I ever think that? But for this thing, like, somehow that became the North Star for me. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was like, it was almost like a badge of honor to be like, I practice for 8 hours today. I'm like, great. You didn't get anything done, but you practically had the horn on your face for 8 hours.
Right.
So interesting to think that. It's just an interesting path to get there, you know, because we obviously got there from some really well, I mean, we're both intelligent human beings and, you know, the fact that we kind of both got to the same place. I think that would be really interesting at some point to kind of explore like how we got to that point.
Right.
But it's another.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. I mean, that the concept of repping is kind of ingrained in music.
Yeah.
But what, so. You've talked to me about an experience that was kind of a very different approach. Would you mind sharing mm-hmm. a little bit about that and kind of what you experienced in that change?
Yeah. So I had an interview for a job that I was really excited about. It was like in a place that I wanted to be. And it was starting to include some new aspects, some more administrative stuff that I was interested in getting into. So I was like, oh my God, like this is the thing, right? This is the thing that's going to be my next step, which was mistake number one. Two, I play in an orchestra here and we were doing an all Wagner concert. And because of my typical manic, like I have to be playing all the time, practicing. You know, I practiced really hard for that concert. And our rehearsal schedule, because it's a regional orchestra, it's pretty, we're stacked. We're within 2 days. We do a lot of playing. I mean, it's not the orchestra's fault. It's just, if we want to have an orchestra, that's how it's going to have to operate, right? So, and I don't have an off button. So I was like, no, this, I have to play this the way I'm going to play it in the concert, to make sure that the maestro knows, like, this is what it's going to sound like. I felt like I was letting people down if I wasn't in a position where I was playing the way I was going to play. And I overplayed. And I felt a little tinge in my lip. And I was like, it's okay. Like, it'll be fine. And then, of course, I got, I hadn't heard anything from this job. So I was like, well, I guess nothing's going to happen. So I go to visit a friend in New York. And I get the call. And they're like, can you come in? And it was in 2 weeks. And I had decided from that little tinge, realized, okay, I need to take a break. So I'm just going to use this Thanksgiving week as a break. Right. And I'm like, oh my God, I have this audition and I have to play a full recital. I have to be like uber prepared. I mean, this is like a step, like a big step up school for me. I was like, oh my God, like I have to have this. So when I went back and realized like, I literally cannot play for more than 10 minutes at a time. Like it very quickly realized it was an injury. I've only had one other injury in my life. And like, once I slowed down and got past my panic, I realized like, oh, this is what this is. And I mean, it was physically like, I can't play more than 10 minutes. How am I going to put together a recital in the, I don't know what you call it, the process that I had developed for myself, which was mania. Like, I can't play 24/7. Like, how am I going to do this? So I actually talked to my therapist and I'm like, oh my God, this is like the thing for me. And now all of a sudden, like, you know, I can't barely play. And so we really started talking about the mental prep and like what I could do. And I talked with, you know, Jeff, my old teacher, and, you know, he's like, listen, you got the chops, you know what you need to do on the horn. And he was like, just trust that. So I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then I was doing one of the things that was suggested was having my horn and walking into a hall, which, of course, I have access to. And I walked in. No one was there. I wasn't even going to play. Just walking in and noticing all of the feelings that came up. And it's really amazing, like, how nervous walking into an empty room can be when you're thinking about, like, the mental, like, okay, like if people were looking at me and I was going to start playing, like it just shows the power that really your brain has to make situations really real. And so the goal was to notice what was coming up and then say, have, because I'm not playing, I have the time. It's almost like you have this performance timeline, but you can stop moments. So right. It's like if you could freeze time, but you're still operating and say, okay, is this thought helpful right now? Or is this something I can address later? And so I had the pause button. So I could pause, think about that and be like, no, I don't actually need this right now. This is something I can address later. Here's actually where I need to focus. And then hit play and, you know, go through. I had the music. I'm visualizing playing through the music. If I had like a slip, I'm like, pause. Okay, like where's that coming from? What would be a thing that I could think here that keeps me in this zone, right? Mm. So I was able to go through that. And that was 95% of my prep was that. And I think it was also a lot of addressing some worth issues that I had, which I think is all stems from not being mindful, right? That you're constantly overthinking old scenarios or you're trying to plan for upcoming scenarios so that you're uber prepared in case it doesn't go the way that you want it to. So it was really just allowing me to be like, okay, right now, what do I need? And being able to prep for that and allowing to know like, oh, like all for me, what stems through most of my fear is judgment. And it's either good judgment or bad judgment. It kind of doesn't matter. Well, I mean, it does matter. I mean, no one wants to be thought poorly of. But even like right. The good stuff is scary because you're like, oh, I have to maintain that. Am I capable of maintaining that level to that degree all the time?
Right.
So judgment is a big one for me. So to be able to say, oh, I feel unworthy at this point, or unprepared, or whatever the words that I've replayed in my mind for the last 3 decades of my life, I could address them and say, okay, I'm not fighting for a seat at this table. I'm already at the table. Like, I have everything I need to be here. Now it's just like, this is your opportunity to just leave it all on the table and have a conversation with these people to be able to say, is this what I want? Do I actually see that I am capable of making the changes they would like to see? Is this a good fit? Right? Like, your whole perspective shifts when you're in the moment, really thinking, what does this mean for me? And how can I assess this situation? When you're not thinking about what happened in the past, the last time I was on an interview, or, you know, what's going to happen if I get this, like, I'll deal with that when I get there. You know what I mean? But like I said, I get into that real swirl, like it's that hurricane where things are just swirling so quickly, and it's hard to stop and take a moment. And being an empath, if there's a lot of people in the room, I also feel all that energy coming at me. So having an empty space was a really great way to like detach from some of that. But also, one of the things I kept thinking, mantras was, of course, a really big thing for me. And one of them was, I'm the eye of the storm, which just meant no matter what chaos was going on around me, or emotions or whatever, that probably didn't have anything to do with me, I could be in the middle and calm. It's very still where I am. So yes, I could walk into it or reach into it if I wanted to, but I don't need to. That stuff can operate without me. And that's a little humility, I guess, but being in that moment of just calm and like, okay, and having the space to think. I mean, we were just talking about that, right? Like,
yeah.
God, what a like amazing experience it is to sit down and say, I have time and space to honor the thoughts in me and to give them room to grow and evolve and to think through and to throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. You know, having conversations is certainly, I wasn't talking to very many people about this, but, you know, a few really close people to me, being able to kind of talk through what my experience was with these things, you know, and of course they're in the field too. So it was like really good to kind of get some feedback, or like, maybe you want to think about this. But it was, like I said, 95% that kind of mental prep. And it was addressing old thought patterns. It was allowing myself to be calm in the moment. It was giving myself the time to address those things when they came up, to be able to process them and say, this isn't important now. This is something I can address after the performance, or, you know, even between pieces. Like, right. You know, I can wait till that point. But that was like a total shift for me. And, you know, going in, I don't think I've ever been that calm, ever, for any interview. Like, usually, you know, you feel those butterflies in your stomach or whatever. When I woke up that morning, I felt those things, but, you know, I kept repeating the mantra, which was, you are the master of the material you'll be presenting today. I just kept saying that anytime I had a not serving thought. And then when I got there, I didn't even get to rehearse with my accompanist. I had to sing through my parts because I'm like, I've got limited chop life here. And I was not nervous. I did not feel nervous. I was so prepared mentally to handle, and it wasn't this rigid thing of like, it has to happen like this for me to be calm. It was like, here's the things you can think. Here's where you can be at this moment to help yourself, right? It was all just like this real flexible, fluid. I've never felt anything like that.
Your comment about being the eye of the storm, I think, is perfect for that. That it's like, I can be where I am right now, and no matter what's going on around me, I can achieve the things I'm trying to do, and like focus on the thoughts that I want to cultivate in this moment, and let everything else go by.
100%.
And it's so,
fact that the realization that you have the power and the choice. Because think about like when you were prepping before, it almost felt like it wasn't a choice. You just went into that mode and didn't even acknowledge the decision to step into that mode. It just was so habited right? That you feel like it just happens. Like, I feel like at this point, I don't even have any say when it happens. And what I realized is it wasn't stopping it from happening. It was acknowledging it when it did and then saying, is this necessary right now? And you kind of work backwards, which seems kind of counterintuitive, but it's, you know, when with habits, you have to, it's not like you're not going to do them. You just replace it with another behavior. And that takes a little bit of time. But it was such a, I remember, I can visualize it right now in my head. I remember what the room looked like. I even remember what it smelled like. I remembered what I was wearing. I can remember where people were sitting in the audience. And the fact that I had brain space to think about, what can I share with these people? What's the connection I can make? It wasn't like, I need to show them I'm good enough. It wasn't that. And I wasn't even focused on that part of it. I was focused on just being able to have enough of my shit together to not lose it in the middle of this interview, you know? So to be able to go past that without it having be a goal of the process to say, what's the worth and value in this for both people? How can I make this a meaningful moment, not only for myself, but hopefully for somebody else? It was mind blowing to me. I've never felt like, even when I left, the person who was the chair of the committee, we were talking in the car and they were like, seriously, can we be friends? Because this has been super fun hanging out with you. And that to me was I did my job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I showed who I was and I let that lead rather than I have to be the best at the horn. I have to be the best teacher. I have to be the best administrator. Because face it, I'm not any of those things. But I do believe I have something valuable. And the fact that that's what came across made me feel really proud in that moment. Really proud.
That's amazing. It's such a great description of a different way of thinking about performance. And I think I'm trying to cultivate some ideas about what we can offer people who are like, oh my God, that sounds amazing. That's what I want out of my performance. And what are some good ways that we can suggest that people start just even putting one toe into this kind of a different pool?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting thinking about that in retrospect, because when I started going through this process, I'm like, you have to do this now. Right. There's zero time right. to dip your toe into this. You got to jump in head first. But I mean, I think, you know, kind of in thinking about this and what I learned from that process. And I mean, it was kind of like, now I can go back and dip my toe into it and say, okay, I have a little bit more time to think about what's going to happen here. The non-judgment thing is a big one for me, right? So when I feel feelings, rather than shaming myself, which is ultimately what I'm doing, I'm like, oh, okay, there's a reason that you feel like that. But now in the middle of this performance is not the time to address that. And it is okay to have these feelings, rather than why are you letting yourself be interrupted by those things? Why do you constantly go to your worth? Why, you know, just shaming myself over having feelings. And I think it's the realization those feelings do come from somewhere. And I'm not blaming somebody else, because I'm the one who's continued that. But to give yourself a little bit of grace and a little bit of patience and a little bit of space to move past that.
Yeah. The
you can't the thing shame about yourself into success, for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that is the number one thing to take away. If people take away nothing else, is that no matter what thoughts you observe, don't blame yourself for them, right? That's the whole concept of the non-judgmental environment. Yes. Is acknowledge what's there and realize they're just thoughts, and you can deal with them if you want to in this moment, or you can wait till later, like you were saying. But the most important thing is to just acknowledge that they're there. And then to, at some point, if you choose to do so, to say, okay, maybe those thoughts aren't helpful. I don't need them at all. I'm going to replace them with these kinds of thoughts.
Absolutely. And it's a relief. That's the most amazing thing. I mean, we were just at a symposium out on the West Coast and I did this performance. It was very last minute. And I had a caveat about going to this thing. I'm like, I'm in a really bad headspace. I don't have the emotional quotient or the mental quotient to do a performance. I feel like if I did a bad performance or had a bad performance, that it was going to take me over the edge, and I was not willing to go there. But due to circumstances, I ended up having to do this performance. And when I walked out and did the performance, a bunch of people were talking about their pieces, which I love. I love hearing people's stories and then being able to listen to it. But I knew that the story for me was, I just love this music. This isn't about me, like, and I don't think the other people were doing this either, but this is how I was thinking about it, is that I don't have anything to prove. I just want to play this music because it's a really awesome piece of music. And then when I walked off and when I had that moment in the lecture that I did there, but it was like, it was the first time ever that I was able to walk off stage and not give myself any crap.
That's amazing.
I didn't shame myself. I didn't guilt myself. I wasn't like, oh, you missed this, you missed that. And the thought that I had was, this room was full of very, very famous horn players who have careers, who are amazing people, some of which who have been my mentors and who have been my idols and people I look up to. And I was like, you know, some of them probably think that I suck. And my immediate thought was, but I don't care. Because that wasn't what this was about. And I don't know how I got to that moment at that time, especially considering all of the emotional baggage I had brought with me to the symposium. But it was a really, really powerful moment. I mean, even just talking about, I mean, that was weeks ago, and I like, I'm full of goosebumps right now.
Yeah.
But it is kind of one of those things where allowing yourself to have the space to grow and evolve and not be like, oh, I should be good at this by now, or I should be able to do these things or whatever. But that just, I did these things. Here's the results. Is it the result that I wanted? Yes or no? And then you make decisions accordingly. It wasn't full of emotional strife, which every performance I've ever had has been that. Either yeah. really happy or just, I'm going to go hide in a hole for the next 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So that non-judgment thing is massive for me.
Yeah, it's so important. And like I said, if off of this interview, people get nothing else other than the fact that they should just be aware of their thoughts and attempt to cultivate and to recultivate every single day this idea of non-judgment, of separating your own self-worth and your own identity as a human being from yourself as a musician. Like you can miss a note and you're still a good person and there's still people that care about you and love you. So
yeah. And you had said something the other day when we were talking and you're like, I feel like there's things I'm getting now, looking back on my studies and all the things that I've learned, that I get more now, that I understand at a different level now. And I think that kind of humility was like really inspiring. And it's something that I have also considered and thought about, like, the amount of times I was told something in a lesson and then 10 years later, I'm like, oh my God, that's what that means.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that like sometimes you have to have certain experiences to get stuff. Like that's why, like, to be a great teacher, yeah, you could be a really great teacher in your first year, but you'll be a better teacher in year 10.
Right.
Because nothing can replace the experience of like knowing and really getting acquainted with things. Methods, pedagogical, people, right? You learn a lot about that kind of stuff. So giving yourself the space to be good enough while you're getting good enough.
Yep.
I think is super, super important.
Yeah. You know,
yeah, it's just amazing.
I think that we're going to have many, many good conversations. And I think that we should plan to do a follow-up and keep going with all this stuff. But I would love to keep in mind helping people to understand these elements kind of, you know, somewhat in a vacuum so we can try to get these points across in the most coherent way possible so people can help start to kind of incorporate them into their own practice. So why don't we pause there and look forward to our next conversation, if you don't mind.
Yeah. No, that'd be great.
Before
it's really easy to get deep into it, isn't it? God, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just like, yeah, God, it's so awesome.
Oh, it's I know, me too. So the next one will be like a 3-hour mega talk fest, I think. Maybe something
God,
like that,
be
right?
Amazing.
But before we go, is there anywhere, if students or anyone who's listening would like to get in touch with you, Jesse, what's the best way for them to do that?
I mean, I'm on social media platforms, so Facebook, Instagram, you know, certainly email. Okay. You know, those social media, I think, is the easiest way.
Great.
Just because it's the most accessible.
Great.
For people. Yeah. And I'd be, you know, if we want to include it in a tag or something, we can do that too. Just an email or contact or.
Great.
If you just Google Jesse Thoman, you're going to find a way to contact me. So
awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jesse. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Thanks. You too.
Another big thank you to Jesse Thoman for our wonderful conversation this week. And thank you all so much for listening. You can keep up to date on all new episodes by following me on Instagram at Mindful Musical Life, or by visiting the website, mindfulmusicallife.com, where you can also get in contact with me directly to ask questions or suggest topics or guests for future episodes. I am also starting a new round of personalized mindfulness coaching, and if you would like more information about that, you can reach out via my website or Instagram to schedule a free consultation. Thank you again so much for listening, and see you next time.